listeners, and thank you for tuning in. We are here at the poetry reading of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. Let's just pay attention as the sound comes up. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly grim and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore, quoth the Jebrench.
Super hot.
Then methought the air grow denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, sung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite, and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the munchlax.
I ate too many sweets.
Truly a stirring, poetic voice for the generation.
Hey everyone, how you doing?
Hello.
Has Bane taken over Jeb's voice side, or...?
Wasn't quite what I was going for.
I know. I haven't been able to play it yet. I got a paycheck just in time that people were bringing devil daggers to my attention, and Super Hot launched on the same day, and I've got work to do. So I'm like, Hey, Jeb, what have you been playing lately?
Super Hot was one of the most innovative shooters I've played in years.
Did some of that get lost in translation?
I've been playing Super Hot.
And curiously, we've been where it's super hot. Yeah, it's not cool. But yeah, Super Hot.
Yeah, literally. It's
finally came out.
Super Hot has finally come out. And Jeb can vibrate as the great hype machine.
It's great that all this time I've been saying it's like Super Hot is amazing. Everyone's like, wow, Super Hot is amazing. I told you.
Do you ever get a Cassandra feeling going on of like just quietly sitting there going, you know, yeah, I know what I'm talking about here.
Sometimes I'm right.
So yeah, Super Hot. Can you give us the 10-cent summary for people who somehow have missed everything?
It's Hotline Miami if it were a first-person puzzle shooter.
And just like that, I'm interested.
I have to say that's interesting anyway, because if you didn't already know what it was, I'd be like, what the hell is a puzzle shooter?
Well, it is certainly ultra-violent. It is, as opposed to Hotline Miami's flavor of ultra-violence, which is very visceral, very bloody, Super Hot. It's a lot of broken glass everywhere, but there's a lot of it. Everyone is glass. Everything you can throw or wield is glass.
Oh.
So it has this really appealing aesthetic, despite all the violence going on. Even so much as the replay share mode, which, by the way, there's a replay share mode because
of course that
that's brilliant.
Is.
It's funny to see a level that took you a couple minutes and a lot of pacing yourself, because for someone who doesn't know, the mechanic behind Super Hot is that time moves based on how you move. Generally speaking, nothing happens until you move, and if you stop, everything else more or less stops around you.
Like, there's a very, very slow kind of... Like, if I understand this correctly, like, even turning your head makes some movement happen, right?
Moving your reticle does...
Unfreeze time?
Yes. So bullets will still move as you're looking around for a gun or aiming.
This is almost like the opposite of Hotline Miami, where the only way to stop time is death.
You'll die a lot in Super Hot 2. You get to watch it happen. You pick up a gun, you turn around, you see, oh, there's no way I can get away from that. And that's when you realize something. You can shoot bullets out of the air. Because this game is badass.
Nice.
The first achievement I got was the one for shooting a bullet with another bullet.
I almost hope everyone has played it before they've heard you say that, because the moment where you try that just out of desperation has got to be so rewarding.
I can do that. Oh, yes.
Like, see, one of the things that, like, the comparison to Hotline Miami, that like, every time someone compares it to Hotline Miami, a part of my brain wants to get up and, you know, start arguing. And I don't mean to do that, like, you're wrong, but just because of what it means to me. Like, this example here, that experientially is a single amazing moment. And you can tell the story of that moment. Whereas one of the hardest things about Hotline Miami is conveying anything about what happened. There's the aftermath, and you're standing around going, holy shit. But,
well, Rob Retro Remakes was saying that the thing about Super Hot is everything that you do, the game doesn't give you a chance to process what you're doing until you stop.
Yeah.
Because even, it's still so, there's so much to react to and process that even when you're mid-level and still planning your course of action, you still have to focus so intently on all the chaos around you.
Yeah.
And then it's after the level is done and Super Hot starts playing, you realize, wait, I just smashed a guy's head into a toilet stall, ran out of the restroom, threw a pair of pool balls at the bartender before he could pick up his shotgun, picked up his shotgun, shot the guy who came back from the back room with it, threw the shotgun at the bartender while the other guy's pistol was in the air, spun around, shot the two people who came behind me.
Right, so it's not that you don't have time to think about the commands you're inputting, it's that you don't have time to think about what the character is actually performing.
What
based
you're
on
actually
this.
Doing, right.
Oh, that's very cool.
And at last check, because of the end of the level, it shows you what you did in real time. This again,
yeah.
another point of dissonance between this and Hotline Miami for me is the key driving factor emotionally of Hotline Miami is frustration. When you're done with a level in Hotline Miami, it's not a feeling of glee. It's a feeling of finally. Whereas this, it sounds like after you're done, it wants to give you this moment to exult in what you did. And it does that without being nearly as grungy and misanthropic as Hotline Miami is, which is really fascinating. I'm really excited to play this game myself.
I don't want to give away too much, but there are certainly times when it's like, I can't believe I just did that. Finally, I'm finished with this level. there's a whole bunch of things that that you discover as you play. Like, going into what Rob said on Twitter. I didn't know you could shoot the gun. Like, shoot someone else's gun. Oh.
Does it make it explode?
Well, yes, it's made of glass.
That's amazing.
You can also do things like, you can kite the red dudes into the pathways of other bullets from the other red dudes. So you can get people to shoot their friends. It's great.
There's
one level where I ran down a hallway, punched out three dudes, picked up a dog statue, threw it at a guy with a gun, picked up a katana, slashed one guy with a katana, threw the katana at another person, picked up his gun, and shot the two guys who came in behind me.
Dogs are great.
Dogs are great. See, every game is better
and
with a dog.
And then the game called me a good dog in the next level, so...
So the game's even better with a dog.
So, interesting thinking about it right now, actually, because I put this on the list of things I'm really interested in that aren't for me. As a reflexive reaction to first-person shooters.
Yeah.
But it might actually be a first-person game I could handle, since it's in that weird, more or less turn-based...
Fascinating.
Since it's in weird time format.
It's in a different time. It's real time with pause.
Reminiscent of how Baldur's Gate solved the problem of how do we handle D&D rules on a computer.
Don't evoke that.
Real time with pauses.
It was terrible, though.
Well, it was terrible because it was trying to make second edition D&D approachable.
No, it was terrible because the whole real time with pauses is not actually a very good translation of the turn-based structure. As far as I'm concerned, it was the worst of both worlds.
Could have just made it turn-based, it would have been fine.
Yes, I would have loved a turn-based hack for Baldur's Gate.
Turn-based role-playing games were already working quite well at the time.
That's true. That is true. On the other hand, in the specific case of 2nd edition D&D, if I can briefly wave my bubble pipe around, 2nd edition D&D had a fragmented view of time use in general that was basically trying for a turn-based game trying to emulate a more real-time thing, which is why you had fractions of actions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was entirely possible that in 2nd edition D&D, a character would have to add one half of an action to one third of an action to determine when they next acted. A computer can pick up that load a little better than a human.
I think that was how Final Fantasy X's combat system worked.
Is that the one you could code, or is that 12?
I think that was 12.
Ah.
Final Fantasy X was the one that the faster your speed was, the more turns you got. Stuff like that.
Yeah, 12 has like it's like an AI builder, essentially, because you don't control all your party at once anymore. So,
am I alone in finding that kind of fascinating and cool?
Yeah, I don't know. I have a bad relationship with it because I find it means I have no fucking idea what my companions are doing, and that really frustrates me. With something so detailed as a JRPG combat system, which is to say, you know, you get crap tons of different abilities.
Did it still do the Final Fantasy thing of dumping you in a fight box? Like, every time you had a random encounter, it's just like, okay, we're going to inorganically put you in a sterile arena where the thing happens.
I can't remember. I don't think it's disconnected from the playfield anymore. I think, like, if you run away, I think you actually just run away. I don't think it's, like, a function you have to use to escape the arena. But it's been a long time since I played 12. I can't remember for sure. I could be corrected on that.
Mm. I remember...
I never played 12.
I remember that Final Fantasy 13 had that awkward worst of both worlds, where you clearly had an open world and you roamed towards things, and then when you did, you still got a transition screen.
In 13?
In 13.
13 was a game about walking down corridors.
Yeah, but you got these open fields areas with these giant stompy dinosaurs in them, and if you ran up to one of the dinosaurs to try and kick it in the shins, it would kill you, by the way. But sure. It would still give you a transition screen of like, oh, nope, time to get into combat mode.
Well, that's sort of what I'm remembering for 12, in that you get a transition screen, but you don't actually get a separated playfield. It's just like, whoosh, you're in combat. But then, you know, that still relates to the area around you.
Anyways, Superhot, so really good game, and I highly recommend you get the Game of the Year 2016. It's also the Game of the Year 2015.
I was gonna say that.
Nice of them to get the Game of the Year out of the way early.
Are you calling it Game of the Year 2017 yet, or are the jury still out on that?
There might be DLC.
Oh god, there's DLC.
Super hotter. Superlative hot.
What
2017, we can go back and give Children of the Zodiacs the Game of the Year that they'll be missing for 2016.
Oh wait, 2017, you can name it Retro Game of the Year.
What?
Yeah.
What if Super Hot releases a level editor?
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. That just needs to happen, doesn't it?
I am intrigued by this possibility. Anyway.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Knowing the way out the mechanics of that game work, oh, wow.
Yep. There's a lot of potential for some genuine nastiness and some genuinely just plain out interesting cinema.
Yeah? So, Talon, what have you been playing that's not super hot?
I have not been playing Super Hot, nor have I been playing Devil Daggers, two games that I'm really quite interested to play.
You've been playing anything much?
I actually went and did a bit of a revisit, not directly, but I did a bit of a revisit of Mirror's Edge.
Mm.
And I'm going to not rant for 20 minutes on this, but trust me, I could. Mirror's Edge, I really love Mirror's Edge, but I love Mirror's Edge in much the same way that I think Jeb loves Two Worlds 2. I do not have any... I'm not going to claim that Mirror's Edge is a misunderstood work of genius. I'm going to say Mirror's Edge is a deeply flawed thing that I love.
I think Mirror's Edge is pretty well understood, actually.
Yeah, and it's still a good game. It's
garbage.
Especially the price points it sells for. But I still really love what the game was trying to be, and I still look at it now as all the problems it had were more structural than superficial. Like, the way that the plot does not make a single spit of sense isn't a function of, it's a bad plot, it's a function of the way the game was made meant making the plot important was shuffled off to the side and handled by cutscene people, as opposed to trying to weave it into the game itself.
But it is a bad plot.
Oh, it's an awful fucking plot. I feel really bad in that Rhiannon Pratchett is the kind of writer I'm generally going, hey, she did blank, but she's a really good writer. Because, like, she's responsible for Tomb Raider, she's responsible for The Forgotten Sands, she's responsible for Mirror's Edge, but no, really, she's also really good. Like, she could do really good.
As I understand it, people generally feel that Tomb Raider was quite a good game.
The plot is garbage on toast.
Okay.
Which one?
The reboot. Tomb Raider.
Not Rise of the Tomb Raider, though.
I haven't played Rise of the Tomb Raider. I'm not going to comment on the plot of that one.
Apparently Rise of the Tomb Raider is an outstanding game.
I really hope so. I really hope so, because
I have heard it from multiple sources that it was, like, a lot of people consider it the best game that came out last year, and last year was a pretty deep year for games.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Rise of the Tomb Raider is, like, I don't gain anything by games being bad. That's one of the things that frustrates me so much about this discourse we have, especially the idea of, you know, the worst game ever. I don't actually gain anything that a thing that was created that's designed to be fun and interesting isn't. That's, I can understand the frustration giving rise to a voice, but it's not like I personally glean, you know, karmic joy from, oh yes, these people made a crap game. Rah.
I think there are some specific circumstances where I do.
No, fair enough.
Just, you know, corner cases. In general, I very much agree with you. Positivity, yes, and, you know, we all benefit when games are good, but there are definitely some games, like, some games.
Sometimes we can have a little bit of schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude!
Yeah, fair enough. I will happily indulge in schadenfreude. I will indulge in schadenfreude in certain cases, but in the case of Rise of the Tomb Raider, I genuinely hope it to be good. I like a lot of the people involved in the development of that game. I like the concept of Lara Croft. I honestly kind of like the reboot character they're working on. I think they've done some fuck-ups in that. Like, my personal headcanon for Lara Croft in Tomb Raider is that she is Lara Croft Jr. And this parent figure she's constantly trying to live up to is her mother, Lara Croft, who, as an archaeologist in the early 90s, was doing things like backflipping off the face of Tyrannosaurus Rexes and stealing Thor's hammer and killing her evil doppelganger. So, Lara Croft Jr.
Opening
in Tomb Raider.
Opening the path to Avalon.
Yeah, yeah.
Just straight up magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Her mum had all these amazing, off-the-wall, ridiculous archaeological adventures, and that's why she's always trying to live up to the standard set by 90s Lara Croft. That's my headcanon that makes those two games work together.
I wish they'd done that. Well, honestly,
and of course, her dad, Nathan Drake, had, you know, found, like, a German U-boat in the mountains.
The reboot shits me off mostly because, you know, we don't ever see male video game characters get booted to younger, prettier, more vulnerable versions of themselves and watch them get tortured. So it bothers me on principle, but, you know, the junior angle makes a lot more sense and is actually kind of compelling.
It still makes the ending, the arc of that game is still wonky as hell, in that at the start of it she was running around going, oh, I'm so sorry, when she shoots a deer, and by the end of it all, she's stabbing her pickaxe into the eye of a 9-foot-tall zombie samurai.
Isn't that kind of the point?
Well, yeah, if the arc actually followed, it's more that there's this massive break, and suddenly,
oh, okay.
Like, oh,
so
now she's just straight up, now right. She just, in one of her executions that she can do straight after that angst over the killing of a deer, she can beat a man to death with a discarded skull.
That would, once again, that would still work, but only in the moment of desperation.
Yeah.
There was an arc.
There was an of a thrown skull.
That was, yeah.
The arc of the skull, yes.
Okay. So yeah. I see how you mean. There's a bit of dissonance there.
And in the case of other games that are being rebooted, like Mirror's Edge, the new Mirror's Edge game coming out is going to be not a Mirror's Edge necessarily. It's like not a sequel.
Oh.
It's still using Faith and it's still trying to use a lot of the city. And like, this is my gut read. This is my gut read on it. In that I want it to be good, but I
what's
am
What's going to happen
so...
is that she's going to run very fast and try to escape from the city.
And turn into a blue hedgehog? No. No, I'm looking at the Mirror's Edge 2 stuff, and this is a gut read. I want it to be great, but I am convinced that I will need to wait like 6 months after it launches. Because I have just, there's so much chance to get that game that they are working on so wrong. And they did it once in structural terms. Like, they got it wrong at the start of the development rather than at the midpoint. And it's not like they messed up surface details and got the polish of the game wrong. They got stuff in Mirror's Edge deeply wrong. Like, just as one of my favorite, just as a point. What if in Mirror's Edge 1, you couldn't fire the guns at people? Like, explicitly, you could disarm people.
Yeah, throw them.
You could throw them. You could shoot them over the head.
Club them.
But if you ever pointed the gun
shoot
directly
them
at
head.
A... Shoot over the head.
Oh, like a warning shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you ever actually pointed the gun at a person and pulled the trigger, Faith wouldn't. Now, I know that makes the achievement test of Faith much harder, and
well, you wouldn't
but
have
I don't
that
think that should exist.
Yeah. It's a stupid achievement when she murders someone in a cutscene anyway.
Yeah. Which is equally...
Yeah.
Still, my thoughts on that being that that's a way to depict the character and to follow through structurally and in gameplay with conveyance of the character. The fact that this character can be someone who straight up jukes guns off cops and then murders everyone in the room and then walks through it as opposed to that momentum-driven pacifist runner character really gets on my wick.
It would seem that the idea of you have to keep running was probably written on a whiteboard at the beginning of this somewhere.
Yeah.
And... just like the story guys or the combat design guys never got that.
Never? We're in the same room together?
Yeah.
Similarly, have you seen, in the loading screens for Mirror's Edge, they show the animation of what Faith does from the outside when she disarms someone.
Oh.
And it looks so cool. She looks so rad. And there's even an animation for if
only there was some way to have a camera... in a video game that let you see what your character was doing.
Well, this is what I've been saying for years, but no one listens to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, and this sequence where...
If only that technology existed.
And by the way, the depth of the animations they had for that, like the loading screen thing, it's all in silhouettes because they couldn't get the animations to work in full. Like, they basically had to stop midway through.
They clip through each other?
No, it's not that they clip through each other. It's a matter of... variety and texture rendering and whatnot. But the point is that they had a couple of animations for this. And there's even one where you disarm one cop, another cop comes up behind you while you're disarming the first one. Faith swings up, wraps her legs around the neck of the cop, uses that cop's body as a push-off point to launch herself into the chest of the first one, grab his gun, throw it over the first cop's head, and it goes flying. It's like, that's amazing! Why can't I see that in the game? And then you touch that it's a surveillance state. Like, the whole reason you're using runners is because all digital communication is being tracked and monitored. So, why aren't there cameras everywhere? Why isn't the end of the level going to show you on grainy CRTs, here are the 5 coolest moments of you going through that level? That would have been awesome!
If only this stylish first-person game with... a stark color scheme had some sort of post-level replay system.
If only the enemies were
never
made
catch
out
on.
Of glass, so you didn't just have to stand there shooting them and kicking them.
Not every game is going to be about super hot, but they're mostly going to be about super hot.
Guess what I'm saying is the combat in Mirror's Edge should have been entirely composed from takedowns.
Yeah. Anyway, I really deeply love Mirror's Edge. I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and that thinking about it is, like, I went back and watched some Let's Plays and whatnot instead of just playing the game.
Right.
Because, well, for a start, I'm not that good at it. And second, oh my god, speedrunners of Mirror's Edge are incredible.
I thought you were going to say, because my optical drive doesn't work anymore.
Well, yeah.
And I have it on a disc.
Yeah.
Because I bought it in the Stone Age.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's even worse than that. A friend of ours bought it for me.
Oh, yeah.
From one of the many video game stores that shut down.
Yeah.
It was in a throw-out bin. He's like, yeah, this is $5.
It's like $8.
I want to watch you. He brought it to our house explicitly saying to me, I want to watch you lose at this game. And then I sat down and finished it in one session with him watching.
It's a really good way to make Talon get super fucking stubborn at you, just by the by.
I really fucking love that game. And
You know what? Go a little more passive if you really want Talon to monster a game before your eyes. Just be like, well, I mean, it's really hard, so I don't expect that you're going to do well. But, you know, just play it until it gets too frustrating for you. And he's like, right. Is
Dark Souls 2 on sale?
I will note there is one time when that friend and you did exactly that, and the game that it was, I couldn't get past the first boss. And that was Shadows of the Colossus.
We didn't tell you that was hard.
No, that's right.
I told you that was wonderful.
No, that's right.
Shadow of the Colossus is not a particularly hard game, but it is a little esoteric.
It's time.
It's more that I had two people who had finished this game sitting in the room right next to me constantly, every time I messed up, going, aww. It was like being at school.
We felt sorry for you.
Yeah.
Because you're in the tutorial climbing section.
Yeah. It was also a PlayStation 3 controller. Oh, my hands.
Yeah, I'm not fond of PlayStation controllers of any generation.
Just controllers in general. I feel like I'm going to snap them.
Oh, they feel too big for me.
You've got tiny Munchlax hands.
I'll tell you what, seeing people complain about the guitar grip for Guitar Hero on Tour on the DS was hilarious. Oh, it crushes your hand. It's so tiny and constricting. And I'm like, what? I didn't hear you. I was playing Guitar Hero. Oh, this grip is so roomy.
Well, the Xbox, the Xbox controller is pretty hefty.
I haven't played with an Xbox One controller yet. The Xbox controller that everyone complained about being too big and chunky, I played Assassin's Creed with that, and I thought it was a really good, solid controller.
Here's my theory. I'm going to get you to use the Wii U gamepad.
The thing is so light. Can't
possibly be too small.
That thing is so light.
Weight is part of it as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like,
it is stunningly light.
Oh, yeah, really?
With the PlayStation controller, I feel like I'm going
to
snap it.
They're expecting kids to hold up this tablet screen for, like, 3 or 4 hours at a time.
That makes sense. I'm not dunking on that. I mean,
I'm not saying, yeah, it's not a bad thing, but, like, when I got my Wii U and I saw the gamepad, it's like, it's a pretty substantial thing. This is tiny. What? How is this so light? This is airy.
I mean, I played Cave Story on the Wii, and that was using a Wiimote turned sideways, and that didn't feel... I didn't feel like I was going to break that. Whereas the PlayStation controller, very clearly I had these moments of realizing that if I can't get mad at this game, I can't get frustrated, or I might snap the controller. Which may not be true, but I had that fear.
I don't think you'd be in any danger.
The Xbox One controller kind of feels like a brick in my hand.
Yeah. I mean...
So anyways, did you have anything else to say about...
Mirror's Edge.
Mirror's Edge.
I think I've pretty much tapped out on Mirror's Edge. Hey, Fox, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I found something amazing.
Hot?
No, it's not super hot.
But super hot is amazing, so you can understand his confusion.
Well, like you said, I was writing off super hot. Well, like I said, I was writing off super hot because of the whole first-person perspective thing, though now I'm thinking maybe I should give it a try. Sounds like I should at least find out. But no... What I found is a 3DS game called Project X Zone. Stop me if you've heard of this. Jeb has heard of this. You remember...
Which one? One or two?
Two. I think you remember, was it Last Retro Gaming News or the one before, where Talon was naming a crossover game that wasn't Marvel vs. Capcom or Capcom vs. SNK? And I was trying to remember some really weird, broad crossover. It turned out to be Tatsunoko versus...
Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
Capcom.
Yeah.
But what you thought I was...
But what I was thinking of was Project X Zone, which I had seen in passing in the EB and gone, what the fuck? And so, next time we passed it, I went and had a look, and I was like, oh, this is more incredible than I thought. And now I've tried it out a little because there's a demo of Project X Zone 2 that you can download if you have a 3DS. Oh my god! What is this game?
From what I've been able to see observing it, it kind of owns.
It has Sega Tessenturo.
It has Sega Tessenturo. Not in the demo, but he's in the character list.
He's in the game.
It's not even, like, not to downsell that Sega Tessenturo is in this game, because that's fucking incredible. But because it's a pixel-based game, and it's using all these characters who are from 3D properties, you have these amazing pixel art versions of, like, Jill Valentine and Goro Majima from fucking Yakuza? In his ridiculous fucking shirt, and the shirt flutters really well.
Of course it does.
Oh, yeah. The pixel art is absolutely beautiful. That's why I was like, okay, I expect this game to be just garbage, just garbage. So I went and had a look at the download page, and I was like, holy shit, this just looks like, this is beautiful.
Yes.
Who looked at this and went, well, this is the trashiest thing we're ever going to make. Let's make it look fucking incredible.
It's going to make it the best trash ever.
It's got a better looking moth than Fire Emblem.
It sure does.
Does it have moth?
Whoever the hell the blue-haired ponce with the sword is.
They're all blue-haired ponces with swords, but this particular literally, one is Chrome and Lucina.
Well, yeah, they look better than they look in their own game.
I was disappointed.
Project X Zone does more justice to Mega Man than than Capcom does, let's be honest.
I was a little bit disappointed to find out it's the original Zero model and not the Mega Man Zero game Zero model, because I have a bit of a crush on GBA Zero. I think everyone knows that by now.
Yeah.
But still.
You know, in Project X Zone 2, Sagata Sanshiro meets up with Mega Man and Zero and asks them, are you Mega Man or are you Rock Men?
Oh yeah, that's the other thing.
They fucking nailed Sagata Sanshiro so well.
There is fucking genre savvy fan stuff, translation jokes. Every joke that nerds want to hear is in this game.
And it looks so good. How did anyone care this much about this?
Phoenix Wright gains the ability to defeat people with objection because Maya wishes for it. And Morrigan is enchanting her amulet at the time. Well, her Magatama. Yeah, just because she was like, well, how do you want his powers to work? Oh, I know!
Wait, I have this idea. Sure, whatever.
What else would you do? She's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I probably have to buy this game, long story short. It's still like $70 in all the shops here, so I'm looking for it online, but damn. Yeah, I gotta have this.
It is on my gotta have list too. As soon as I saw those screenshots with Sagata, it's like, oh, yep, gotta get this.
I first saw the sprite out of context, and I remembered looking at it and going, Who the hell is that? Why did they make a character who looks exactly like Sagata Sanshiro? And then I saw the whole screenshot, which has, you know, Sagata Sanshiro's name on it. Like, they fucking did it. This is amazing fan art. Who made this thing? This can't be official. We don't live in a world that pure.
There was an excellent bit of this, by the way, where people finding out about this game hadn't seen the Sagata Sanshiro collection. So there's these comment sections where it's like, what's this about? I'll be on YouTube for a minute. I'll be right back. And then coming back going, holy shit, American advertisers suck.
This is a guy who destroyed a nuclear missile by judo kicking it into space.
I hope his existence in the game is that he came back because people were no longer dedicating their lives to playing video games.
Did you ever see the Christmas ad for Sagata Sanshiro?
Yes, I did.
Listener, for context, Sagata Sanshiro was an advertising mascot for the Sega Saturn, only in Japan, and he was a very classically styled
for the white for the white Sega Saturn.
Judo guy.
Hence the name.
Yeah. And also, his name is a pun that means, you know, play Sega with all of your might, kind of thing. I'm not perfect on the Japanese there, but the thing is, this character would show up and they would advertise games using him, not using advertising media from, not using like screenshots from the game or animations from the game. They would use him consistently. So for like the Panzer Dragoon game, which was about Ogre Battle game, it was like commanding an army. It started with him on the screen and then it pulled back and there was another him right next to him and it kept pulling back until there was an army of them and then they all did a judo pose and charged the camera and there was like a giant version of him in the crowd, like they had like an ogre sized version of him. And for the Bomberman game, when they wanted to advertise it, they showed a judo duel between him and some generic guy who he judo flipped, and then when the guy landed, he exploded and Sagata Sanshiro walked away from the explosion. So very, very silly. And they use him for specific games, and they also used him for events. And on Christmas, there was an ad for Sagata, a Sagata Sanshiro ad where Santa enters a house And all the little kids come up and ask for lots of different things from Santa. And then Santa stops, pulls off his mask, reveals that he's Seigatar Sanshiro. All the children fall back, and he judo flips the children that weren't dedicated to gaming. He just walks away with all these unconscious children and one kid sitting under the tree holding a Sega Saturn. What the fuck?
That's right, children. Ask your parents for Sega Saturn games this year, or Santa will beat the crap out of you.
And during Golden Week, they would release an ad, which was him going to a club and judo flipping all these wastrel teenagers who weren't playing games.
What I'm saying is, what we're trying to get at here, listener, is that the biggest mistake that Nintendo ever made was not putting Seigatar Sanshiro in Smash Brothers.
Yes!
That's true, actually.
Yes!
That's a very disappointing development.
He's incredible.
But there's always the next Smash Brothers.
I mean, they've already... He's in a game now. He's in Project X Zone, too.
He's on a Nintendo console again.
Yep. It's time to make it happen.
Yep.
But yeah, Project X Zone.
So anyways, did you have more to say?
Yeah, no, I
before
think that's
about
it.
We got sidetracked by...
Game.
By the...
Nope.
The force of nature that is Seigatar Sanshiro. I'm gonna go get Saints Row 4. And make Seigatar Sanshiro in that.
That's completely appropriate.
I think the one thing we can agree on is that their battered bodies will never forget.
Yes. Oh, also, hey, the listener, Saints Row 4 is on sale at Humble Store for $4.50.
Wow.
For the rest of the week.
That is so worth it.
It's really, really good. If you do grab it, if you're an Australian like us, get an American friend to grab it for you, because then they play it. Then you can play with American players. The Australian version will only ever be able to play with other Australians, which is a bit rude. But anyway.
It looks like beautiful trash. I have to get my hands on it. I don't play a lot of that kind of game because I don't have quite the appreciation for sort of digital junk food that a lot of people do. But I do love Saints Row, and I suspect I'm really kind of like this. So, I don't know. Maybe we could talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
I wonder if we will.
I wonder if we meant to talk about it last week.
Shh. Or this week.
Don't let them peek behind the curtain.
Pay no attention to the plan behind the curtain.
And now it's time for Retro Gaming News. All the news is fit to print for the month of February, 2008.
Brought to you by the Seigatar Sanshiro for Smash Brothers lobby. There's no joke. We just really want Seigatar Sanshiro in Smash Brothers. God damn it.
Imagine a world where Seigatar Sanshiro can judo flip Pac-Man.
Sonic!
This was your fault!
I want to see this throwdown. You failed as a system mascot.
The Dreamcast was riding on you. You were the chosen one.
I learned it from watching you.
Here in 2016, it's a leap year, so I figured let's roll the time back and look at a previous leap year. But not 2012, because too many good things came out then.
It's
we're
going to
look... Yes, honey.
Shit, I have another day to get stuff finished! Alright! Man, they should give me extra days every year.
Mother of God. As we know the pattern of how things get released, there's a certain doldrum period in the January-February period. There's been, you know, the post-Christmas things have trickled out, and now mostly people are treading water. But that doesn't mean what comes out now is all going to be bad.
If enough has trickled out of you post-Christmas that you're treading water, please see a doctor.
Which means...
We got the witness jokes out of the way in the previous podcast.
I think you'll find I have a pretty endless stream of them.
I don't want to...
Oh, sorry, I've disturbed Talon's flow. Let's get back to it.
I'm trying not to be too pissy about all these interruptions, but seriously, fucking quit it. Right, so, February, a month that happened. And surprisingly, no one released a game on February the 29th. But what did get released included a Tycoon game on a handheld. Zoo Tycoon 2, in fact.
Yeah,
yes.
There we go.
Yes.
Wow.
Curiously, 2008 is also the year... this is just for a tiny drop of perspective. This is the year that was... The Wikipedia entry for it is 2008 saw many sequels and prequels in video games.
No, that could be any year.
With some new intellectual properties, including Army of Two, Dead Space, Race Driver Grid, Left 4 Dead, Little Big Planet, and Mirror's Edge. So, you know, there was some
good stuff. Actually a pretty impressive year for new names.
Well, no, you had Mirror's Edge, Little Big Planet, and Left 4 Dead. Yeah, those are impressive. Army of Two didn't exactly set the world on fire.
No, I'm not saying all of them, but there are some good names in there.
Pretty well liked.
Ah, I did not know. I don't know Grid. I really shouldn't make any kind of glib comments about car games at all, really.
I don't like Grid, but Grid is pretty well liked.
Okay.
Wait a second, didn't you just name off, like, the most identifiable games from this generation?
None of them are in this month.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have a tie-in game.
Those were the games we could be talking about if this weren't February.
In any case, just want to clarify, it's not so much that I have any idea about tycoon games, or this tycoon game in particular, but I spend a lot of time looking at the DS shelf, hoping that they'll have something other than shovelware.
Speaking of the DS shelf and shovelware, we have a tie-in to a major franchise that has been releasing a game a year since their first one.
Oh, it's one of the handheld Assassin's Creed games?
Yes, it is. This is Assassin's Creed Altair's Chronicles.
I bet it's brilliant. I bet the DS has exactly the grunt that you would need to make a good Assassin's Creed of some kind.
I was going to say, because the 2D side-scrollers are, for Assassin's Creed, lately at least, have been pretty good.
Wow, really? Holy shit.
Okay, so here...
The Assassin's Creed Chronicles? Yeah.
Yep. That's kind of cool. I mean, I wish them well and everything. I just don't ever expect that.
Consider that the least bad Assassin's Creed ever made, which is Assassin's Creed Liberation, came out on a PSP.
Well, yeah, but it was just an Assassin's Creed game on a handheld.
Yeah.
It wasn't
a
change of format.
It was cut down to manage it, yeah.
Shanghai and Indy and all that are apparently quite good.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Of course, Syndicate was also apparently really good, so...
Really?
So Assassin's Creed Syndicate, I haven't played it, but I've watched several of the cutscenes, and the cutscenes have this amazing dynamic where... The Fry brother, I think it's Jacob.
Oh, this is the one with the siblings.
This is the one with the siblings, where Jacob will be in the foreground making some grand proclamation, and behind him you will see his sister giving him the flattest fucking look. And it's not a matter of this is her default affect, it's a matter of they have clearly worked at making her look at him really sarcastically. So he's like, and we're gonna call our gang the Rooks, and she stands behind him, mimics his gesture, and then rolls her eyes. And as they're walking away,
nice.
She's like, it's a dumb name.
So they're pretty believable brother-sister pair, is what
you're saying. Evie Fry kind of owns. I wish it wasn't doing the whole, well, the boy is tough and violent, and the girl is stealthy. I wish they weren't doing that, but Evie still really owns. So, next up, we have an Xbox 360 release of, and I cannot believe I don't know more about this franchise, quote, a Magic the Gathering meets Monopoly game franchise.
This is a Cameo.
No.
No.
No, not Cameo. It is a Namco Bandai game.
Namco Bandai?
No, I thought it was a Rare game.
Sorry, published by Namco Bandai. The developer is Amayasoft at Jamsworks. This game's Japanese launch was November 22nd, 2006. Its English launch was February 5, 2008. So a
is there, like,
full
some
year.
Baton Kratos game on the Xbox 360.
No, it does. It does have one of those words in the title that I look at and go, "Well, what the hell? Like, how do you?" I don't even think that isn't. I'm pretty sure it's just a made up word, and it's not saga. I know what saga means.
So is the word saga in there?
The word saga is in there. It's something saga. No,
unlimited. No, you know what unlimited
means. I know
means.
What it's. It, I'm pretty sure it's a nonsense word. I am almost certain. Like, this is a universe concept that they have in their world.
Right.
One of those things.
Yeah, it's called Culdcept Saga.
Oh, that. Ah, oh, fuck! I recognize the word.
Yeah, I recognize it from, like, you know, image galleries and whatnot. But apparently, this is a game that tries to be Monopoly meets Magic the Gathering. Like, that's the franchise tagline they use for themselves in Japan.
Is it spun off from another series?
Because
I swear I've encountered Culdcept somewhere before.
It has previous expansions, but yeah, it's a collectible card game board game.
Hmm.
There was Culdcept, then there was Second, and then there was Culdcept Saga.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
I guess I must have just heard of the franchise at some point and gone, I don't know what that is.
It's a franchise that's been going around since 97.
Yeah. So, next up, we have another franchise game.
Apparently Cold Sept was really good.
I can't help but think that if you can combine Magic the Gathering and Monopoly in a way that doesn't immediately bomb, so if you get a sequel, you've probably got a pretty good idea there.
There's a DS version.
So, next up, we have another franchise installment in a high-octane action spectacle fighter game. I'm not going to comment about whether or not it was good, because I can't remember which one of this franchise was the bad one.
Okay, so, is it a platinum game?
I think it's a platinum game. I'm just going to double-check that on the Wikipedia page. No, it's Capcom. Developed and published by Capcom.
Do we have a narrative genre?
14-year-old boys think it's cool bullshit.
Is it a Devil May Cry?
It's a Devil May Cry!
Nice work, Jeff.
Devil May Cry 4?
Devil May Cry 4, well done! Is that the one where he rides around on the chainsaw?
This is the one where you don't play as Dante.
Oh!
Is this Devil May Cry 4 DMC, which comes in the Devil May Cry edition?
No.
Okay.
Devil May Cry edition. No, that's a different game.
Devil May Cry 4 is the one where you play as Nero, who looks exactly like Dante,
but
he's younger and edgier.
He's the Sonic the Hedgehog.
Which is pretty amazing, because despite what a lot of fanboys think, Dante was edgy as fuck. Even before DMC.
Speaking of edgy, we have a relaunch of a game for a new generation.
Oh, Sonic 06.
The original game was a first-person shooter on consoles, lauded for its ability to use that well. And it was a game that featured heavily fighting and hunting dinosaurs.
Ooh.
Turok.
Yes, the relaunch of Turok, where you mostly spent your time hunting and shooting, not dinosaurs.
Ah, what the hell?
Yeah. All right, so we have a pair of tie-ins this month. I'm kind of taken aback at this, actually. So one of them is a tie-in to an anime. It's an anime I have something of a reputation as being actively against. But
okay, so it's Death Note.
It's L, the prologue to Death Note, Rasen Nirvana, which is a DS game, and I couldn't give a thundering shit about it.
The only thing I know about Death Note is you don't like it.
Light wank puffin.
And next, we have a tie-in to I think she's technically a late Victorian author.
You're talking about a Jane Austen game?
No, not Jane Austen. Later than Jane Austen.
Okay, because it's obviously not Grand Theft Auto. It's not Saints Row 4.
No, not Saints Row.
Which is, of course, a Jane Austen.
It's just usually Jane Austen when someone does a stupid nutty tie-in.
I'm actually not sure if she is technically late Victorian. She made multiple genres of mystery stories. She had several franchises, effectively, of different mystery-solving people doing mystery-solving in their own ways.
Agatha Christie?
Yes.
She was later than that, wasn't she?
Much later, I assume. I'm thinking I've got my royals mixed up, don't I? Yes.
Probably.
Yes, it's an Agatha
Christie was born in 1890 and died in 76.
Yeah, I was thinking the 1890 period was late Victoria. So, yeah, it goes to show what I know. Because I was thinking of Queen, yeah. Derp. Dear.
Yeah, pretty sure they had a king at that point.
Yeah, the King Edward couldn't talk, apparently, I think. He had a stutter.
Wasn't he just a dick to the Scots?
He's a British king.
Well, yeah, okay, that's a given.
Except for the British kings who were also kings of Scotland.
I think you find that's a point of contention in and of itself.
It's an order of effect thing. The ones who started as kings of Scotland. Anyway, there was an Agatha Christie tie-in game.
Mm-hmm.
For And Then There Were None, which is, thankfully, the much less vile title of that particular story. What platform do you reckon that this game got put out on?
DS.
Close.
There's a lot of
PSP.
Weird mystery mom games on the DS.
No, it's not on the. It's not on a portable game at all. Mm. It's a stand-up console game.
This is an Xbox game?
It's on the Wii.
It's a Wii game.
It's a Wii game, okay.
Of course it's a Wii game.
Of course it's a Wii game.
I was going for something weirder since you said that it was on a home console. I go, okay. Well, it's not one of the obvious choices, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of family stuff on the Nintendo consoles. That's kind of where it rests if it's not going to be on mobile.
Now, we're going to pass by a lot of games that I just couldn't begin to describe in a way that would be meaningful to y'all. Like, Go Puzzle. I don't know it well enough to... but I know that one of them, which is Blank, a futuristic blank, we've talked about before in a different release, I think.
Did they do a futuristic Harvest Moon?
Yeah,
they did.
Simple Life, Beautiful Life.
Innocent Life, a futuristic
Innocent
Harvest
Life,
Moon,
yeah.
Which at last check,
that's
you
futuristic?
Quite like. You ride around on a little
You
moon
are
buggy.
A robot.
Holy shit. No, okay, I'm
you
thinking
play
of
as a
totally
robot.
Different game.
I love how we're sitting here talking about child-friendly games and Fox's first thought is, holy shit!
I'm not child-friendly. We established that.
No.
I'm quite unfriendly to children in general.
It's a game where you play as a farming robot and you have 2 years to prevent an apocalyptic volcano from destroying the town.
I'm sorry, can I say holy shit again?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. No, I thought Innocent Life was the reboot done by the original creator of Harvest Moon, who's like, these games have become entirely too focused on, like, romance and shit. Get back
that
to
was,
farming,
that was,
goddammit.
That was A Wonderful Life.
Right, okay. So I was mixing up the two.
Or the one where you play as a girl called Another Wonderful Life.
Because of course.
Oh, that is so. That is so. Girls is an option.
Let's be fair though. For that time frame with Harvest Moon, that was surprisingly forward for them.
Yeah.
To actually give you the option of which one you wanted to buy.
They did. You were able to play as a girl since the second DS Harvest Moon. I think it was around for a while. Rune Factory is the one where it took obnoxiously long for you to be able to play a female main character, considering it was made. Well after Harvest Moon had ladies.
So, I apologize for acting as if the Agatha Christie was the weirdest tie-in. We've got three more tie-ins. We've got a tie-in with a movie, which sank without a trace. It was based on a young adult fiction novel. Really, I can't think of a single thing to say about this that will actually not just straight up give it away. It's about a teleporting protagonist.
Was it heard of meaningfully before it vanished?
It was the Jumper tie-in game.
No, I never heard of this.
Yeah!
Man, you would not want to call the book that in this country.
No!
For what it's worth, a jumper is a sweater.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
And a daggy one at that.
Like, super daggy, yeah.
Like, yeah, your mum gives you
it's
a jumper.
It's like a tracksuit top.
Yeah. But wait, we've got worse as far as dorky tie-ins go. We've got a tie-in with a TV channel.
A TV channel?
A channel. Like, it's explicitly in the title of the game.
Is it a channel with a meaningful identity like MTV, or a channel that's just super lame like
the main meaningful thing about this channel's identity is that it doesn't live up to it anymore.
The History Channel?
The History Channel game.
Oh my god! Okay, hear me out. This needs to be a sim. It's about deciding what kind of content you're going to put on the History Channel.
It's like, all, was Hitler a shark?
It's all scored on a sliding scale between Nazis and sharks. And you have to see if you can sneak aliens in there without anyone going, wait, you're called the History Channel. It'll be brilliant, you guys, trust me.
A reality show, which is about taking things and making them gaudy and awful, but spending a lot of money on the process.
To make, like, a Pimp My Ride video game?
They did!
Jesus Christ!
And guess what platform it's on?
It's on the PlayStation 2.
It's on the Wii.
No.
The Wii.
It's also on the PlayStation 2, because I watched Future Friends stream it.
Yeah, it got released on released on the Wii in February. And
I can sort of understand this in a video game, because then you can have all the stupid, extravagant, ridiculous fun without having to spend any damn money.
Yeah.
So I can sort of get that.
Those were a bit
It's a shitty driving game.
Okay, so really you should just go with the Ride Pimpin' available in Saints Row.
Yeah, or if you want a shitty driving game with ridiculous vehicles, hunt down a Dreamcast copy of Wacky Races.
They made a Wacky Races Dreamcast game?
It's really good. Ooh. It's really good.
I still have a working Dreamcast.
It's really good in a bad racing game way. All right, so we have a Xbox Live Advanced release of what was originally a PC Flash game about playing a very high-speed ninja with lots of fail states.
N,
yes. We have an extreme NDS and PSP release of possibly the video game. Like, when people want to talk about video games, they mention the they mention this video game, or they use iconography from this video game. It's one of the...
Super Mario Brothers?
No, earlier. Think arcade cabinets. And it's not Asteroids.
And it's extreme.
Donkey Kong?
It got... This is blank extreme. It's Space
Pac-Man?
Invaders Extreme.
Oh, Space Invaders Extreme.
All right. Now, here we get to the point, the only reason I decided to use 2008 and not 2004. The ridiculous names. This is the second most ridiculous name I've been able to find.
All right, hang on. Let us try and guess it first. You got to play it straight.
This is a game where... God, how to describe this? Okay, you play a cowboy pig rescuing his son.
I know this one.
Yeah.
It's, well, actually, I don't know what it's called, but it's the Cliffy Belmont. Cowboy Pig Rescue, totally not Castlevania reference.
Yeah.
Weird, out of nowhere show. It's called something Ham or something, isn't it?
You play Robert Belmont, an unanthropomorphic pig, through six levels.
Oh, it's not Cliffy.
It's not Cliffy.
Oh.
But you have a pistol, a shotgun, a whip, and a pack of dynamite, and you're here to rescue your piglet, Cliffy Belmont.
Oh, that's Cliffy, okay.
Who was caught TPing an ancient castle ruled by darkness. And this game has the wonderful name, Barnyard Blast, Swine of the Night.
Ah!
Nice.
Okay, that subtitle is superb.
It's not the dumbest name this week, because that belongs to the next one, which is a franchise game that's kind of trying to be Mars Attacks.
It's a franchise game that's trying to be Mars Attacks?
Yeah, like the franchise is... The franchise very clearly draws from the Mars Attacks aesthetic. You play conventionally the baddies in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about animating a giant mascot to kill people.
I don't think I know this game.
If I told you the
mascot,
franchise...
Like an advertising mascot?
Like an advertising mascot, yeah. If I told you that the franchise is called Destroy All Humans?
Oh! I have heard of this, but I didn't know it was a franchise or anything.
Yeah, this is one of the sequels to the Destroy All Humans line.
Yeah.
In this one, it's Big Willy Unleashed.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah.
Very, how droll.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't get any holy shits. Failed to earn themselves a holy shit. They can try again next year.
And the rest of this... Honestly, the rest of what I haven't mentioned in this month is really quite hard to... Like, it's repackages of existing things. Like, hey, it's a puzzle game on the DS where you play a pair of cute little dragons.
Oh, there was a DS Bubble
Bubble?
Bubble,
yeah,
bubble? It's cute.
Bubble Bubble Double Shot, because DS. Yeah, they do that. It's a tie-in with an anime about ninjas.
It's a Naruto game.
Yeah, exactly. But some of the names this month are breathtakingly generic. I think my favorite is Turning Point, Fall of Liberty. That's the whole game's title. That's
Shooting Man's game, but aside from that...
There's another game called Lost, Via Domus, which I don't think is a tie-in with Lost.
Never heard of it.
I mean, there was a dome.
Frontline, Fuel of War.
Mm-hmm.
Dungeon Explorer, Warrior of Ancient Art, MX versus ATV Untamed.
Oh, hang on, that's not what they... Oh, no, it's not. It's okay.
You
have reminded me that I have to get a copy of that one Mystery Dungeon game, Shiran the Wanderer, but I want a Japanese case insert for it, because the American art they did for it is the ugliest fucking game cover I've seen since Mega Man. It's horrid, and the Japanese art is so cute!
Also, The Club, which I guess really wanted to try and be a Fight Club game.
Oh, really?
The story
of the club
of the game,
was like a Wii Fitness dance thing.
The story of the game centers on The Club, an underground blood sport controlled by a wealthy elite who place their bets on who will survive gladiatorial combat. Oh, and also, The Sims 2 launched on 27th of February.
Oh, well.
Never heard of it.
No.
I don't know if it'll take off.
That's been the Downloadable Concept Podcast for this Super Hot, and thank you very much for Super Hot. That's been Super Hot.
That's been Super Hot.
And that's been Super Hot. Super Hot. Super Hot.